WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. The image most of us have of boxing is a punch, a blow to the face which contorts on impact with blood and sweat flung through the air. It underscores the brutal, violent reputation of the sport. But photographer Larry Fink has captured a gentler side of boxing with his book of black and white photos called simply Boxing. Fink went to training gyms, many of them in Philadelphia, and shot what goes on behind the scenes. The hard work of training, the relationship between the boxer and trainer, the dingy settings, and the fans. An exhibit of Fink's boxing photos from the book are now at the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York. Burt Sugar is well known to boxing fans as a writer and a commentator, and he's one of the most passionate authorities on the sport. He's written an essay on the history of boxing in Larry Fink's book. They both join us today on Fresh Air to talk about boxing. Let's begin with Larry Fink, and I asked him what got him interested in photographing boxers.
It was a simple thing. It was just simply an assignment to photograph Jimmy Jacobs, the ex-manager and so on of Mike Tyson. And it was about 11 years ago before Tyson was champion of anything except his, volatile emotions. It rose out of its origins and became an obsession.
Obsession? Why? How?
Why? Me being right there in the cradle of all that violence and all of that contention and all that competition gave me a tremendous amount of harmony. Now, why that?
Yeah, why? Why? Why that?
That probably is a deep psychological obsessive secret that I'm not about to know. Forget about tell.
So you don't want me to ask you about that?
No, you can ask anything you'd like.
Right. Well, let me just say I'm very struck by the contrast from the photographs that I see, the kind of intimacy that you've been able to capture in the gym, the tenderness, the touching, which I think does contradict and contrast what most people are familiar with boxing, which is what you see in the ring, two guys beating each other up.
And that's what it's for and what it's about. It's about a symbolic, conquest of another man's territory to inflict some sort of doom on him. But in the gym, albeit for territorial divides and rights, there's a good deal of caring and a good deal of paternal tenderness amongst the trainer and the fighter and the various people who are part of the coterie. It was that really, really stimulated my interest. It was the fact that gladiators could be mothered by their own father.
Hmm. Larry Fink, how would you describe the sounds, the smells of a boxing gym?
Well, that could be a very, very long story. Start to describe smells, but there's the smells of body, which are sometimes acid and sometimes sweet. There's certainly the sound of there's a certain kind of gesture that they do. When they look out to shadow box and punch, there's a it's kind of a concentrating of your breath, and so it becomes in alignment with your body and the striking pose of your fist. But the smells are also of the dank wood, of the spit on the floor, and of the ages and ages and ages of bad and good intentions.
Larry Fink, when you're photographing, do you try to be invisible? If you come into a gymnasium, do you introduce yourself to some of the boxers and the trainers that are there, or do you try to just work like a fly on the wall?
Much more hygienically so than the fly on the wall. That is no lie. It's a rife place.
I understand.
At any rate, I do introduce myself. I come into the gym. I mean, indeed, I'm not one of those guys who hangs around and becomes part of the network, so I'm not a known factor. Right. And when I do come in, it's a special event. And I do introduce myself. And many of the guys and the kids who are boxing and training and stuff come up and want their picture taken in the traditional way. And I do that, and yet then I explain that I would rather work in a candid fashion. And then I become invisible. But the only way to become invisible in my sport of photographing is to be absolutely and utterly visible, which is to say to photograph with real freedom, with real direction, with real drive, with utter confidence.
What I find looking through your photographs is just this portrait of backs and shoulders and skin. We see the sweat, we see the pores, a sensuality that I found really very touching, very moving, very beautiful.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let me say something about Larry's photos.
Yeah, go ahead, Bert Sugar.
They are as untraditional as you can get, and I think that's what makes them rare. They are not X hitting Y and Y's face contorted. They're everything almost but that traditional, and I don't say classic because I think Larry's are, they aren't, traditional photo of the hitting. These are everything in and around and leading up to, but it is the people and, the, as you pointed out very aptly, the sensuality of these people in this sport, this machismatic sport, who are, I think, the interest and what really is Larry's forte.
Larry, did you study anatomy, for instance?
Over long years of looking at bodies.
Yeah. Informal training. But there, is that...
I have no formal training whatsoever.
But do you find yourself in... is that what you see, the sort of slope of a shoulder, the sort of catch of a face?
Yeah, I mean, I'm either blessed or cursed with a vision which is all too physical.
And black and white seems very appropriate for photographs about boxing. Larry?
Well, one of the things about the many of the pictures in the book and the whole Philadelphia boxing scene is that the venues in which they are take place are look a little bit like 1940, 1950. The Blue Horizon is a thing out of the past, even though it's still working into the future. And the gyms are the same, and black and white, of course, is appropriate to that kind of high drama, the idea that there's victories to be won and defeats to be suffered, you know, that all things, as you know, aren't relative, that there are absolutes in life. Black and white is, indeed, symbolically, black and white.
I want to talk a little bit more about the relationship between the boxer and the trainer. And Larry Fink, you said what you saw were fathers mothering these young men. I mean, that's the kind of, I guess, outsider looking at this relationship. What does it mean when a father mothers a boxer?
Well, in our culture, very, very often, men don't have the license to touch one another. And somehow or another, when guys put on gloves, first of all, they can't even go to the bathroom by themselves. So they have to be cared for by the men who surround them and who wipe down their ears and get the sweat off their face and so on and so forth. So what it does is it brings to bear a new license of physical immersion, if you will. So the mothering is just simply touching.
If I may, Marty.
Go ahead, Bert Sugar. Yeah.
You excuse the pun or two-thirds of a pun, P.U., that in talking about touching, there is a touching act at the end of boxing that you never see in other sports, with maybe the exception after the final Stanley Cup game where they line up all the hockey players and they shake hands. Mm-hmm. There is more hugging and appreciation by boxers who have fought each other in the ring after they've just taken all these rounds to try to do whatever they can and beat the bejabbers out of each other than I've ever seen in any sport.
Boxers hugging boxers.
After 10 rounds or 12 rounds or mm-hmm. how many rounds it is, hugging each other in appreciation and respect for what they have stood for and as long as they've stood.
Over and over again it happens. It's really, it's a real act of majesty.
An act of majesty.
Yeah.
To go from this combat then to this very caring, tender yeah. affection.
Yeah.
And an appreciation of another person, mm-hmm. which is rare in sports where everything seems dominated by a seek and destroy approach, no matter what the sport.
My guests are photographer Larry Fink and sports writer Bert Sugar. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Well, we're talking about boxing today, and our guests are photographer Larry Fink, and he has a book of photographs called Boxing, and in that book is an essay by Bert Sugar, a boxing commentator, has written many, many books about boxing, and a former editor of Ring Magazine and Boxing Illustrated. Reading your essay, Bert Sugar, about boxing, looking some at the history and looking some at the sociology, it is a lens, I think, to understand certain parts of this country's history. Certainly, it's an urban sport, one that has, I guess, took root and really stayed in cities, right?
In the main, that's right, Marty. There are exceptions, but those exceptions, more than anything, make the rules. It's kids who were raised in very crowded atmospheres, had to fight for survival, fight for their way out, fight for pride, fight for territory, turf, as Larry said, anything. Going all the way back to the Irish tenements of the 1840s, through the ghettos of the early Jewish settlers of the first decade of the 20th century, to the Italians, the African Americans, then called blacks in the now projects, Latinos in the barrios. Whatever, they had to do this to survive, and in many cases were able to translate and channel this into boxing itself.
And do you think boxing is a way of then, and I guess I'm speaking metaphorically here, though, a way of fighting your way into society? And thinking about these various immigrant groups, they all had their boxing champs who fought for them.
Fought for them, fought for their pride, fought for their identification, and they all vicariously, and not every Irishman fought, but they identified with John L. Sullivan, and not every Jewish immigrant on the Lower East Side fought, but they identified with Benny Leonard, and the Italians with Rocky Marciano, and the blacks with Joe Louis, and the Latinos with Roberto Duran and others. It's he's theirs. He's their symbol. And through his success, their success grows. It's a major thing in the growth of this country.
Has a boxer, and perhaps even a good boxer, ever come from the upper classes?
The closest, and I was asked that recently, the closest we can ever, I mean, there have been Anthony Biddle Duke fought Philadelphia Jack O'Brien and got his head handed to him in sparring matches. I mean, boxing does not get its recruits at the debutante line at the country club, but there have been borderline middle-class kids, Gene Tunney having been one. He studied Shakespeare. And you know what? The fight crowd didn't appreciate him because he was not one of them. These kids are scrappers. They're scrapping for a piece of life, a piece of success, a piece, if you will, of history, even momentary history, by being called champion. And it's a wonderful thing to see. But upper class, no, let them play polo is the thought.
Well, Larry Fink, is that also what interests you in boxing? Because it's about perhaps class struggle. It's about racial and ethnic issues, which are still very, very raw today. Do you
Extremely
see that?
Raw.
I mean, see that?
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I have a slight political history in this of about class struggle, and certainly the underclass moving his way up through his fist, through individuated victories, is certainly part of my interest for sure. Yeah,
because you've also taken photographs of society people.
Oh yeah, over the years, I mean, a long time ago, I was on this program with a book called Social Graces, which was a group of pictures from rural Pennsylvania, real working class, pithy, you know, funky types, and then people from the debutante balls, not the boxing recruits, though. So I've always, my work has always been involved with aspects of power and mm-hmm. how it doesn't actually fulfill you, even though you think it might.
Well, it's interesting, Larry Fink, to think about, I guess, the power of the fist in boxing and the kind of economic, political, social power associated with the upper classes. How do you photograph that? What's the visual difference?
The visual difference is profound. I mean, the boxers are half naked. They're full of their bodies. They're full of a certain kind of sensuality and thrust, and they're full of a primary, individuated kind of, you know, competitiveness. Whereas in the Wall Street, in the debutantes, there's a tremendous amount of tittering and self-consciousness and a vanity of a different order, where people are much more prone to neurotic tremolos than basic fisticuffs.
Boxing, if I may just jump
Go
in
ahead,
here, Marty. Why boxing appeals to me is in this era of homogenization where everything is big business and big this and big that, one of the last Really, one of the last refuge of individual entrepreneurship and individualism is boxing. It's boxing. This is a single sport by a single man against another single man. It's not one of 11 or one of 9 or one of 5 in the world of sports, or one of millions getting downsized in that big firm in the sky. This is one man, and he's going to make his way as one man.
It's a family farm.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Mike Tyson-Evander Holyfield fight of this past July in Las Vegas. The Nevada State Athletic Commission revoked Tyson's license. He can't apparently apply for it within a year's time, and they fined him some $3 million. Bert Sugar, in your book, is this enough punishment for what he did in that boxing ring, which is to bite part of Holyfield's ear off?
No. This man should not ever be allowed to fight again. He brings the sport into disrepute. He brings human behavior into, he shames it. Why it really hurts me, Marty, is the people who are against boxing, who view it as pure savagery anyway, and I disagree with them, but they have the rights to their thoughts, cannot distinguish between what Mike Tyson did and what those kids who learned to operate within the rules have done. This man should be barred, period, and a paragraph from sports from now on.
What kind of a boxer would you say, looking at Tyson's career, and he's won, I don't know, more than $100 million in the years that he's been boxing. What kind of a boxer is he? Where do you put him, Bert Sugar?
Well, I wrote the book, The 100 Greatest Boxers of All Time, and I didn't put him in it before this. So he would have fallen out by definition before this. He wasn't in it, so I don't have to do an arrangement and a rearrangement.
But why do you think he's done so well if he's, in your book, not that good a boxer?
Well, remember, boxing goes back, as my essay in Larry's book shows you, for 100 years. So 100 boxers, 100 greatest boxers, is like writing on the head of a pin the Lord's Prayer. You have to tuck in a lot. So Mike Tyson has only, see, a great boxer fights other great boxers as a rub-off here. Muhammad Ali is a great boxer. He's a great boxer as much for his skills as for having fought and beaten men like George Foreman, for having fought and beaten men like Joe Frazier, for having fought and beaten men like Ken Norton. And you can make a case in each of their instances, they're great. Mike Tyson, in 35 fights, has fought one man who maybe had a passing chance at greatness, and that was Michael Spinks, and that was 9 years ago. He has not rubbed off against other greatness, and I really don't see it, and that was his greatest fight, and it was 9 years ago. Mike Tyson, I thought, had a chance and had skills when the aforementioned Jimmy Jacobs was managing him. They now are non-evident. His skills are so far behind him, they're in a rearview mirror, and he can barely see them. And I just don't think he's one of the great boxers of all time.
Why do you think he's so well known?
Well, he was very, very strong, and he was very, very mighty. And also, Jimmy Jacobs and the club down there perpetuated that sense of Iron Mike. You know?
And take that one step further, he also has transcended the sports page to the tabloid front page.
Yeah, he got himself involved with all kinds of malarkey, as we know now.
Malarkey called rape. Malarkey called the auto wrecks. Malarkey called assaulting people on streets. Malarkey called giving away his car once he dented a fender. And marriage to Robin Givens and whatever. So Mike Tyson is sort of a celebrity sighting more than a fighter.
But he is part of this tradition that you write about, Bert Sugar, which is a kid in trouble, grows up in a poor neighborhood, gets adopted, in quotations, by somebody who sees, obviously, some kind of gift there and wants to shape them then for the ring. What do you think went wrong with Mike Tyson?
I think he was apologized for throughout life and never had to accept responsibility, which is not only a growing up process for everybody, and boxers are included in everybody, but I think he somehow managed to avoid that. Customato of a great, great, great trainer was the man who adopted him, if you will, and took him out of a juvenile delinquency home and promised to have him graduate high school. He didn't. He would continue to get him out of trouble. He would continue to side with him. Jimmy Jacobs, who was a lovely, gentle person, acknowledged that if it wasn't that if he hadn't had Mike fighting up to 20 times a year, he'd always be in trouble. He had to pay to get him out of a jam in Los Angeles where he assaulted a valet in a parking lot who was trying to come to the aid of some girl that Mike was assaulting. He's that bad seed. He's the Patty Duke that you have to see to know what the other kids have done to write their lives.
On the other hand, my experience with Tyson, which is very, very, very limited.
And was a long time ago.
And was a long time ago because I saw him way before he was, you know, doused by the flame of championship and money. Was that he was a developing young human being. I mean, Cus, while he apologized for him, had a sense of ethic, a sense of a pathway for him. And Cus's usual thing was to try to make men out of boxes as well as gladiators. But Mike was definitely a much more volatile property than anybody could handle. And indeed, the mothering became indulging. Hmm. And the indulging, of course, you know, got in the way of the kid's real growth.
Larry Fink's new book of photographs of boxers is called Boxing. Sports writer Bert Sugar has a boxing essay in that book. We'll talk more about the sport in 1 minute. This is Fresh Air. Let's continue our conversation with boxing photographer Larry Fink and boxing writer Bert Sugar. This is a mostly male sport. What do you think, Bert Sugar, about the emergence of women boxers? Do you like that? Is it good for the sport?
It's probably very good for the sport.
Do you like to watch it?
No. I must tell you, I have nothing against the rights of women to box any more than I have anything against the rights of men to strip at Chippendales. I also have my rights not to watch either of them.
Well, why don't you like to watch it?
Because I saw the best fight ever with Marlena Dietrich and Destry Rides Again. They'll never beat that one. I don't know. It's always been to me, and I'm a traditionalist, okay. I love those. I have nothing against women's basketball. I think it's balletic. I think that's a wonderful thing. But I have something against women hitting each other. I just don't think that that's what I was raised in the South to be about.
Not very ladylike, I guess.
I think that's probably the easiest way of saying it. And I do feel, you know, there are women, by the by, all over this country who go to gyms to take the regimen, and it's a hard regimen of boxing to stay in shape, but not to get hit in the nose. Even back to Heidelberg and the old Shishmarks, they didn't, to have them wear it doesn't endear them anymore than seeing a woman trucker with mom tattooed on her arm.
Oh, dear, Bert Sugar. Let me turn to you, Larry Fink. Have you photographed women boxing?
A little bit, yeah.
What do you think?
Well, actually, I agree with Bert when it comes to the match. I mean, I once again have photographed them mostly in the gyms, working out, doing the regime, and indeed, that's an awesome looking thing because here's these women and they're pounding the hell out of these bags and guttering spewing all over the place and whatnot. It's not very feminine, but then again. they can do what, you know, anybody can do what they want to do as long as they don't hurt others.
I guess, Marty, in passing, you said, is women boxing good for boxing? Ironically, yes, because if you remember, women are becoming bigger and bigger, if you will, viewers of sports. The last Olympics, 55% of those watching were women. And I think this might be a way of refreshing and regenerating the sport by women boxers and women who identify with them. Not for me, but for the sport.
What do you make of the fans, Larry Fink? And they certainly, you have photographs in them. They're watching very carefully, and then there are moments when, of course, they're exploding with either delight or horror. What's the kind of texture you get from them? What do they bring to the game, the sport?
Well, since I'm in the front row, most of the texture that I get is sort of steamy and projectiles,
I've seen Larry. He always looks like a Sunday school teacher turning around looking like he's waiting for the next spitball to hit him.
Really? One-eyed Larry here. But what I make of them, I mean, it depends on what section of the gym you go into, whether it be the lawyers or the street thugs. On what kind of delivery they give you, the photographer. But the photographer being in the front row, a fine artist of some repute, you know, some kind of reputation, has no reputation whatsoever to a fight fan, who says down in front, and when they say it, they mean it, and you better get down.
I've seen that act. This, while they are, and I think there is more, if you will, comradeship amongst boxing fans, even if you're on the other side of the coin from them and you think X is going to win and they think Y is going to win, you're sharing more with them than I ever have at anything except a college football game. There is a camaraderie there. You're there to see a fight and you are talking to them, and I enjoy these people. And no, I'm not taking them home for dinner. But yes, I am taking him to the corner pub to analyze a fight because that is our milieu and that's where we met and that's what we have in common.
You know, it's interesting. In traveling around the country as a photographer, I'll be in airports for only too long periods of time, and I'll see a guy with a boxing magazine, and I'll go up to him, or they'll go, and we'll start talking, and immediately we have a kind of fraternity which is unusual to this world. For me, it's brought an entirely new vista into my life.
I want to thank both of you so much for joining us today on the show. I'm sorry we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
Larry Fink has a new book of photographs called Boxing. An exhibit of these photos is at the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York through September 7th. Bert Sugar is a leading authority on boxing and has an essay in Larry Fink's book.